Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer-director, sometimes producer, Jennifer Reeder, whose new film, Knives and Skin, is a heady, surreal, teenage noir mystery. That's how I'm going to call it. And
that's accurate.
It dives deep into a lot of topics, and I can't wait to ask questions about them. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks, Summer.
So where you wrote and directed this, what were you hoping to explore with this? Because I'll tell you right now, for me, it felt like a mix between Memento and Heathers.
That's an interesting combination that I will accept.
Okay.
Knives and Skin is very related thematically to a bunch of short films that I have made, leading up to it, that are available, open and free to the public on my in my Vimeo page if anyone is kind of curious to see what happened before, Knives and Skin. But I've been exploring these sort of stories about girls and women for a while now, and considering coming of age as a lifelong process. I have almost always injected my films with some kind of off humor and certainly some dark elements, almost always someone who's missing, which to me is really, a kind of unspeakable everyday horror, not knowing where one of your loved ones are. And I started off making films not in film school, but in art school. So the kind of visual language of not just Knives and Skin, but again, the shorts that were leading up to it is just as important as the dialogue and the characters and the general, sort of more conventional story arc. And this film, it's like real sort of genre adjacent in a way. It has horror elements, but it's not quite a horror. It has thriller elements, but it's not quite a thriller. It's got these kind of surreal, magical realism kind of elements, but it's not necessarily that. There's people who sing, but I wouldn't call this film a musical. It's a film that really isn't for everyone. So far, either people have really loved it or they, don't get it and they move on with their lives. So far there's not been too many people who are kind of right there in the middle with the response that's like, meh, I don't want to make it. That's the worst kind of response to it. But I wanted to present kind of small town America as really sort of hyper stylized and as a place where, everything kind of hovers just above reality.
For me, the more compelling part wasn't will we find out what happened to Carolyn or will the town find out what happened to Carolyn, but the different ways the different groups of people navigated the lies they were telling themselves. Because you have the parents telling themselves this one fantasy. You have the students trying to portray this other fantasy when they're really living their own personal hells. And that was just so much more compelling to me. And it is. It's the whole fiction, the myth of, idyllic small town life when literally in small towns, the knives come out faster and dive deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really was using that kind of mystery of Carolyn Harper's disappearance as a way to break open all of those characters' personal psychosis. I mean, that really is, for me as the writer, that, her disappearance kind of drives the trauma and more so than that, the coping with the trauma, that each one of those characters, takes on. And so, you're responding to that aspect of it is in a way spot on in terms of like what I was wanting an audience to respond to.
And the ramping up of the paranoia of what happened to her and what did she do and what people will do after, you know, in the aftermath of what happened. There was like a series of fracturings of, I'm going to say, sanity in a couple of people, and just all of the little, it's not even appropriate to call them lies. There's some outright gaslighting going on, and it's both infuriating and enlightening to see the different ways these folks deal with it. You have some people just snap and say, nope, not going to listen to you anymore. Mm-hmm. And just the mix of it seemed so, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a narrative in there that takes both forks of the road at the same time. That's literally literally the best way I can describe it. And and unusually for me, they don't come back together. There's no clear-cut answer. There's no happy ending. There's no destructive ending. It just, okay, that story ends. Life moves on. Everybody goes on. I'm like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it felt important that a story like this doesn't have like a completely, you know, closed, definitive, you know, ending necessarily, you know, and it certainly the story couldn't end, you know, when we find out what happened to Carolyn, you know, that's not the point really, you know, and I wanted the film to have something like a hopeful ending. Or at least an ending where you have a little glimpse into all of these, you know, destructive characters who have the potential to learn from their destruction, and that the ending suggests, you know, redemption. And I think that we as humans in real life are, you know, we're very weird and we do make a lot of mistakes. And we don't always, you know, forgive ourselves or figure out how to move on from those mistakes and sort of admit them and work through them and learn from them. You know, that sounds kind of new agey. This is certainly not a new, you know, like a new agey kind of a film, but, you know, but I do think that it's about just the kind of, human condition and how particular and how personal our coping skills are, you know, or this, not even skills, or our coping mechanisms, you know. I think that that's authentic to real life. And I think there's a lot of people who try so hard on a daily basis just to not, you know, collapse in public, you know, emotionally, you know, and sort of like we all kind of hold our trauma in and, you know, try and cope in a way that seems, you know, kind of publicly acceptable. And then, you know, we're falling apart on the inside potentially. I mean, that doesn't necessarily make for always like a super, you know, like entertaining or funny film, but I also, you know, set out to make something that did feel like, you know, entertaining and that has some elements that are very comical, you know, that there's also there's for me, at least as the writer, you know, I felt like there's some fun and, you know, funny moments in the darkness of this film.
I like the way some of the teenagers were portrayed, because that's you see the confusion, and no matter what a whole lot of people say, that whole trope of, well, you know, this was a mistake, this was a misstep, you'll learn from it and you move on. I'm like, well, what if there's no lesson there to learn? What if it just happened? And because you're hung up on that, well, you'll learn the lesson and then you'll move on. It's like, well, if you're stuck trying to figure out what the lesson was for 10 years, you kind of wasted that 10 years when there was nothing there to learn. And just seeing the confusion and the different methods of just dealing with the insanity around them, I thought was very enlightening, very poignant, especially when they are maintaining their individualisms without trying to upset the equilibrium of this fragile and dangerous environment with the rest of the students in school. I thought that was, I'm like, yeah, that's high school. High school is hell, and then you move on.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly, right. And I think that, you know, the teenagers get that, and then we see we see the adults for whom some of them kind of really can't kind of move past it. They haven't matured, past high school. And I think that, that's been my experience is, the former, right? Like I hated high school, but I don't dwell on it. I moved on, and now I, write films about it. But not in a way to kind of, traumatically relive it, but it's, I mean, teen films are, that's a real genre, and I think there's a lot of teen films that, that are, maybe not meant to be fully authentic, but, I think that teen films could use a little more, authenticity and to be a little more multidimensional, than they genuinely are in terms of just the kind of like super popular ones.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a deeper dive into children coming from unstable households and trying to make the best of it, because, to be fair, we have more of those than the perfect, happy, Cleaver home that was also fictional. And I think maybe as a society, learning to accept that and try to do something about it might help, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And I think that, I also wanted to make a film, my actual, adolescence was my growing up in my own, household was pretty stable. And I have a great relationship still with my mother. And, what appears in Knives and Skin in terms of those kind of mother-daughter relationships is not necessarily, authentic to my own experience, but, I see it in, the lives of a lot of the young women that I've worked with in terms of the previous short films and casting, young people whose households are, deeply unstable and whose adult parents are, really like implicating, these children really into their own, kind of dramas, and I feel like it's important that adults really compartmentalize their own, if they can, if they're mentally stable, emotionally stable enough, compartmentalize, their own mistake making, and try to be, engaged and stable parents. I understand that that's, that for a lot of people that's really impossible. And I wanted to kind of unpack that, especially for moms. I think that film moms, are usually very one dimensional. And I think that for a lot of women, when they become, moms, that identity can be like a real monster that kind of takes over. And what happens if you actually don't like being a mother, or you're ambivalent, to motherhood? That's like, that's not talked about so much, especially among moms. And so I wanted to present some kind of some difficult moms, and there's certainly some difficult moms, in this film. But I also wanted to make sure that, by the end of the film, they've all been kind of called out on their bad behavior, and their eyes are open, and they can forgive themselves and move on. Just exactly, move on. Either learn from it and move on, or just, flipping move on,
Well, Jennifer, this movie is of joy to watch. It's very beautifully shot. And where could people find you online to sort of keep track of this and what you do next?
Sure. So I feel like the best place to keep track of me. I'm on Instagram, on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. Go to my Vimeo page, which is just Jennifer Reeder on Vimeo, and you can watch a bunch of my shorts. Like I said, they're free. And Knives and Skin comes out in theaters and VOD through IFC Midnight on December 6th.
Cool. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Summer.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Well, Knives and Skin is an IFC Midnight production. The movie might not be for everyone, but it is very stylish, very heady. The description I gave of Heathers and Memento is right on. Some people have called it a teen version of Twin Peaks. I don't think it's quite that weird, but it definitely wanders in that direction. So if you're a big Twin Peaks fan, this might be right up your alley. It's in theaters this weekend, starting December 6th. Not sure when it's going to hit VOD, but as she said, it's an all or nothing kind of thing. I can see where it wouldn't be a middle of the road kind of film for some people. But like I said, if you like Twin Peaks, you might find this to your tastes. We have a whole lot of other indie films to be covered coming up, so stay tuned for that. But if you have any questions or comments on, you know, something coming out that you're looking forward to that I haven't touched on yet, let me know. The number is 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. Check us out on Twitter, @SliceofSciFi. We are also over on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And of course, there is the hub for all this geeky madness, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, check out some of our other interviews. We've got 3 contests running. You can find the instructions on how to enter one or all of those. And of course, leave your own comments on the reviews we have. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting Slice of Sci-Fi and the other shows in this little galaxy of sci-fi fandom. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you don't feel like committing to a monthly pledge, you can do a donation every now and then through PayPal. The link there is paypal.me/scifisummer. Like to remind folks that the monthly pledges through PayPal and through Patreon, your email addresses, your names get put into a hopper, and every month a perk is chosen, be it a DVD, a Blu-ray, a book. Your name may be selected for a prize. We have swag that needs to go to new homes, and I'm hoping that giving these away, either through the perks or through the soon-to-be-up-and-running, I hope, Slice of Sci-Fi shop will serve as a conduit to find new homes for all this media. But that'll do it for this episode. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, for listening, for supporting the geeky efforts here. And we will be back with a new episode of Slice of Sci-Fi this weekend. Take care.